the global economy and the Bible. What does the Bible say? Well, let's go back way back in time. Let's have a look at the earliest economy as it existed, which was basically a barter system of goods and services. You just simply exchanged goods and services. But then ultimately, of course, currency came in vogue. People used currency. And the currency, which is very interesting, of course, was gold and silver, and they were commonly used to mint coins. And the coins would have the value of the gold or the silver in it. But of course, those days are long gone, and then we had other money, and that is commodity money. Now, commodity money was still underwritten by the commodities of gold and silver. Of course, that is no longer true. You could say to a piece of paper, you know, this is as good as gold. Let me take the pound sterling. A pound sterling was worth a pound of gold, of silver, a pound of sterling silver. Of course, that's no longer true today. And so today we have actually what we call fiat money. And fiat money is very, very different. In fact, the one who underwrites it is the government. And the government issue bonds and what have you, and they accrue a certain interest and they have a certain cost for acquisition, and that's basically a glorified IOU. And I've lost most of you, and that's perfectly all right. But what you need to understand is this. The money in your pocket is guaranteed by the government. Forget about the gold or the silver. It is as good as the government. Question. How good is the government? Yeah, I know. When governments produce money more rapidly than the economic growth, the money supply overtakes the economic value. In other words, therefore the excess money eventually dilutes the market value of all money that is issued, and that is called inflation. And inflation calls forth the necessity for interest rates, which are in excess of the inflation. That's why I pay. Now, you see, you got to understand something. A government is made up out of politicians. Is that true? And politicians try very hard to remain in power. They somehow like that. Yes. So they want to remain in power, so they want to please you. Up to a point. I know they tell you they love you and they're all over babies in the oldies at election time. You don't see them for quits any other time. But let's face it, they better please you, otherwise they'll lose their job. You vote them out. Is that true? Yeah, that is perfectly true. Now, the stock market is like a barometer up to a point of the economic condition of a country. And we have seen of late, the last few years, that stock market has been extremely volatile. And the volatility is mainly due to manipulation. That is true. And also the sentiments that prevail. Do you have confidence in economies? Are you listening to the bad news and lose confidence? And it's all a matter of buying and selling. And if the selling overtakes the buying, the stock market goes down. I don't know how many of you dabble in shares. If you haven't so far, don't start it. To me, every stock market is nothing more than a casino. It's really gambling and major manipulations. The mums and dads always get creamed off. They do. And it's the big investors that make the money. Really, it's not us. In fact, it's very interesting when you look at that. You know, a stock market can send people bust overnight. A stock market can lose, even here in Australia, it can lose billions of dollars in one day. If it drops just by a few percent, 30, 40 billion can be wiped off the stock market. And it goes nowhere. And then suddenly it comes back again. And you wonder what the value is. It's basically the confidence. But I'll tell you one thing. If you have superannuation and you're depending upon it, you may find that something like that might happen. It's going down the gurgles. And this is what is happening, has been happening the last few years to a lot of people. A stock market can cause a recession. In fact, it can cause a depression. Do you know the difference between a recession and a depression? In case you don't, let me give you the definition. A recession is when many people are out of work. A depression is when you are out of work. Does that make sense to you? All right. Okay, now you know the difference. The European Union, you've heard a lot about the European, you know, the euro dollar. It's in trouble. The Europeans are in trouble. Why they ever did that Maastricht treaty, which they enforced in 1993, I will never know. I come from Europe, and I used to go to Southern Europe. And when I heard they all were getting nicely together like one big happy family, I knew it was only a matter of time, and we have the problems that we are having today. 48 countries, 27 are, pardon me, in the European Union. Now, when you look at this graph here, and I'm not going to give you too many, but I just want you to have a look at some of them. I don't know what you know what GDP is, a gross domestic product. That's a turnover of a government or a total economy of a particular country. And when you look at this, some of the debts that are carried by some of the people, particularly here like Italy and Greece, it is well over 100%. In fact, Italy is 120 of GDP, this is 160. I don't think Greece is ever going to bounce back. And when you look at the other dark colors, something very significant is here. You have France, you have Germany there, and say Portugal, of course, is in trouble as well. Ireland certainly is in big trouble. But you can see the enormous amounts of money that these governments are owing. Now remember that this is fiat money. They have been printing this money. They have been keeping their electorate happy. Because their electorate wants everything now. Is that true? There's a whole generation, that has now learned to live on credit. You see kids having credit cards, mobiles. And that's old hat. They got all the other gear as well. And they run up massive amounts sometimes on those bills. That is fantastic. I'm just saying, if you look at it here, what the kids are doing is basically what the politicians are doing and have been doing. Now, Greece has realized they have overstepped certain conditions. And Italy, do you know this bloke? Hang on, let me get him up for you. Do you know him? Oh, he's a party animal, I tell you. Don Giovanni, he loves it. Now he's out of a job because he has been very irresponsible. And so, who cares? He's worth 6.2 billion, not million. He's worth $6.2 billion. Not having a salary is not keeping him awake. That's what I'm trying to tell you. But what is interesting is his wealth. What is interesting that he has been clinging to power. He's had 40 to 50 no confident votes, and he has pretty well survived them all. He has had many charges, very colorful ones as well. And we won't delve in that. But I tell you something. If you look at those three, that's about one third of Italy. Italy is in doubt. It is in doubt. Now, these three here have been bailed out. That's okay. But when this one goes under, the third biggest economy there in Europe, that is going to cause such a ripple effect, we all will go back to where we were probably in 2008, when it all happened. It's too big to bail out. It's about $2.5 to $3 trillion. That's too much for the European banks to cover, and they would not be willing to do that. Now, let's say goodbye to him and hope he doesn't come back. They have these meetings. One thing about globalization, we have these fantastic communications. We have this, the G8, we have the G20, we have APEC, we have, tremendous organizations like the variety of summits, particularly the one in Davos, I found very interesting when they said the spirit of inclusiveness, openness, commitment to improving the state of the world. If you believe that, you'll believe anything. They're there for one reason. Money. It's all about money. That is basically what it is about. I'm going to show you that the world is not becoming a better place. If you look at the International Monetary Fund, which, by the way, is mainly controlled by America and some of the bigger European economies. It's very interesting. Neocolonialism is alive and well. Let me show you this very briefly why that is the case. It is so simple. The IMF standard practices, they lend to smaller developing countries, quite a few. And this is the practice. I want you to see that because they're still doing that today. It determines the amount and the duration of a loan. So if you come to the International Monetary Fund for a loan, sure they will, but they'll determine how long you get it. And all of their loans are short term. Now, if you need a loan, it's because you're in trouble. And you need a long time to get out of trouble. And what they do, they give you a loan for a short time. Which means what? After another little short time, you have to come back and ask for some more. And then it costs you more. And so they control the amount, how much you get, the duration of the loan. They set even the interest rates payable on that loan. And that's not the only thing. They reserve the right to devalue your local currency. And if your local currency goes down, it takes more of your currency to pay back. Is that true? And those interest rates are very high. It also dictates the expenditure of the borrower. The borrower is even told what they can spend the money on. Now, hand in hand with the IMF, we have the World Bank. And the World Bank is exactly on the same footing. They are not kind to the developing nations. In fact, they're rather cruel, really. And so when you look at a World Trade Organization, just to give you another little insight, there are 153 members there in 2008. It's a massive, massive organization. And they all want to be a part of it. Now, this is interesting. I want you to see this. Some of their practices. You know, these are the sweatshops in the world. I'm going to show you a graph in a minute that gives you the differentiation of income globally. There is no question about it that we have about 3.5, probably more like 3.5 billion people that are actually working, but they paid below $2 a day. They barely survive. That is very common. You know, we have abolished slavery. No, we haven't. We just don't pick them up and bring them here. That's all. We leave them right where they are. Well, we've become very clever. These are the workshops in the world. I've seen them in India many, many times. You see the work they have to do from early morning till night. It is inhuman. It is wrong. It is wrong how they are used. It is illegal for a government, according to the World Trade Organization, to ban a product based on the way it is produced, such as with child labor. You can't ban. You have to buy it. You have to. And so governments cannot take into account non-commercial values such as human rights. If you did that, China couldn't sell a thing. No, it couldn't. The percentage of products that come out of China, nobody talks about it. A lot of it is forced labor. Oh, very much. It's a significant percentage. Oh, that's right. That's right. Or the behavior of companies that do business with dictatorships. And we're going to look at a few of those. The greatest indictment of the World Trade Organization, the World Bank, and the IMF is an indifference to wrongdoing. Albert Schweitzer was once asked why the world is such a bad place. You know what he said? He said it's not because of the amount of bad people. It's because the people allow them to be bad. It's the indifference that allows it. And when we look globally, it is not a pretty picture. Here you have the GDP per capita, and here you have the earnings. And there you go from $50,000 plus to maybe $1,000 a year. Well, you can look all these territories here. You can see the lighter colors just at a glance. You can tell that these people are horrendously overpaid. Underpaid. Yeah? I'm overpaid. I'm the only one. But do you understand what I'm saying here? It is obscene that we have such a maldistribution of income. It is remarkable. We do very well in Australia. You're all overpaid. Yeah. Just as well, I'm not in politics. Now, basically, the World Trade Organization. Now, you know, you go to the Bible. That's the Apostle James. And he makes a statement. Come now, you rich, weep and howl for your miseries that are coming upon you. Why? Have a look at this. He says this. Your riches are... And you thought it was a good thing to be rich. Didn't you, before you walked in? Well, apparently there's a downside. Your gold and silver are... You know, gold and silver don't corrode, but this is a matter of speaking. This comes against you, he says. And their corrosion are a witness against you. The fact is you've been sitting on it. You've been hoarding it. You have been keeping it. And he says, that comes against you. When? Well, the day you have to give an account what you did with all of this. My favorite author puts it once like this. He wrote this, and I want to say it word for word, that everything beyond, in excess or beyond the basic necessities of life have been entrusted to us to do good and to bless humanity. Now, we normally stand back in awe and admiration of those who have tremendous wealth. I'm telling you, they are to be pitied. Because how much of their wealth are they going to take with them? Nothing. That's what he's saying. You have heaped up treasure in the last days. We're now talking about the last days. Application here. And we live in the last days. You have heaped up treasure in the last days. You see, have a look at this. And the cries of the reapers have reached the ears of the Lord of hosts. Now, this is an agricultural society at the time of the quotation, about 50-60 AD. These societies were agriculture. So he's talking about the workers. What he is saying, he said, they are calling out. They have no means to rise up against their overlords, but they are calling out and God hears them. God hears them. If I look globally around the world, God must hear a lot. You have lived on earth in pleasure and luxury. And you say, yeah, but that's not me. You know, you don't know how fortunate we are the way we live, isn't it? Man, it is unbelievable. From every respect, not just a monetary or a materially things. I mean, we have rights. We have a political say. If you don't like the prime minister, you can say so. It'll do nothing for you, but you could. It'll make you feel better sometimes for a little while, isn't it? Yes, that's right. So you have lived on earth in pleasure and luxury. You have murdered the just. He does not resist you. I like that image. I mean, I hate it, but I like it for what it says. 40,000 to 50,000 of them perish for the want of food. As we speak, they're dying. As we speak. How is that possible? In a world where we have plenty, in a world where we would have enough to feed everybody. How is this possible? How long does God stand aside before he interferes? And if you think that they just die and they're forgotten, no, they're not. God remembers everyone. The ears of the Lord of hosts hears and remembers. He hears and he remembers. They all belong to him. Yes, they do. Every human being belongs to God, whether they know it or not. Right? And so the law really says you shall love your neighbor as yourself. We're not keeping that law as a society. I know there are good things. I know through the United Nations, UNESCO and UNICEF, they do wonderful things. But when you look globally on the tremendous degree of suffering, the amounts, the percentages, I say we do very little indeed. Very little indeed. A universal declaration was given by the United Nations that food is a human right. I wish they would implement it. They're not. They're not. Now, it's not always fault of You and me sitting here. I mean, let's get one thing straight. Do I say that's your fault? No. But if it's still like that tomorrow, you may have some culpability. Yeah? Yes, 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 you could have, you could have. Remember him? He was from Tunisia, Ben Ali. The Arab uprising, isn't that significant? That is all about this bloke was hoarding masses for himself. This bloke was no better. Billions, billions of dollars. They got to start looking for him. He's in jail now, and that's where he belongs. Have a look at him. Well, this bouffhead, we know him. He got killed, didn't he? Billions of dollars. And his people live in poverty. His own people, their own people. Never mind colonialism being a bad thing. Never mind neocolonialism being a bad thing. Hey, their own people are doing that to them. And they are. Horrendous what he did to his people, killing them the way he did. He was going to murder a lot of them. That's what he was going to do. And he's from Yemen, Saleh. Almost got killed. He still hangs on in power. He still kills his own people. He's a doctor. He got a medical degree. He should know the sanctity of life, but he still kills his own people. Why? All he wants is power. All he wants is power. And it is incredible that that is so. These people, and I got to raise this, these people are not terrorists. These people are guest workers, or workers. They go overseas to send money, to earn, so they can send money back. And so many of these people are absolutely used and misused. They squeezed everything out of them and they cover their faces as they complain. This is just a tiny little example. But there is a more obscene, there is a very obscene trade going on in human trafficking, and that makes about 40 to 50% of it. You know, God is going to want an account of this. He's going to settle his account one day. This is obscene. It should never happen. Now, let's have a look at the United States of America, the biggest economy. 30%, almost one third of the world economy is America. Don't you like what's on there? In God we trust. Was a shopkeeper. He got sick and tired of people asking for credit. So he put up the sign. In God we trust. The rest of you pay cash. And so the all-seeing eye, you wonder what that is doing there, but let's leave that alone. I want you to have a look at this. You know, the debt levels there is towards 15 trillion. You could argue that. That's the total debt in America. Do you know how much 15 trillion is? Oh, man, that is an incredible amount. I hope to bring it home to you. Hang on. Towards the 15 trillion, the public debt has increased by over 500 billion each year since 2003. 1 trillion in 2008, because things went pear-shaped, didn't it? And then in 2009, obviously with bailouts and all the other stimulations, 1.9 trillion, and in fact it was 1.7 trillion in 2010. Which is incredible. By June 2011, the total public debt outstanding at a ratio of virtually 100% of GDP. The whole turnover as a nation virtually is the money that they owe. Now, they've got to start, they must pay interest on their loans. And they only have a certain income, and the more they have to pay, the less they can spend on social services, on military and education, etc., Medicare, like health care. You can understand where this is heading. Ultimately, it becomes so unattainable the way that they're carrying on. Something has to go horribly wrong. But I want you to understand something as you are sitting here. If they were to stop paying the interest, then money loses its value. I want you to understand something. The fact that America is paying these massive interest charges, and that's true for any country, is over money that does not exist. And the moment you stop paying the interest, everybody realizes the money does not exist. And so the whole place is bankrupt. We which technically, really, you could argue, is pretty well where they are. Isn't that interesting? If you don't find it interesting, stay here. It's all right. There's more. Here. Expected to jump to 21 trillion in 5 years. Well, who cares? But that's incredible. Today, the average household in America, if in order to pay off their current debt, would owe $500,000, that's $500,000. That's a lot of money. Oh, by the way, let's keep it simple. You think the government is going to pay back the debt? You are. You're the donkey. Oh, you're the bunny. You do that because there's such a thing as taxation. One of the surest things in life. Two things are absolutely sure. Death and taxes. And now we live in the closing scenes of these planets. Shortly before the return of Jesus, you might not even die, but you will be paying tax. Get it? Direct or indirect. Oh yes, tax is always there. No question about it. I want you to see this statement here. The rich rule over the poor. Is that true? You agree with me? Good. And the borrower is the servant to the lender. That's true. And slave to the lender. That's Solomon. That's what he said in Proverbs. Now there's a wisdom book for you. Now this is what I'm getting at here. As we have this insatiable appetite to push our governments to printing more money because we want everything now. We do. We have learned to live on credit. Young people are brought up to live with credit. But you have a borrower and you have a lender. Here. I like this one. This one has a lot to say. He who loves silver, in fact, in the Hebrew, kesef, also means money. So he who loves silver, he who loves money. Have a look at the next little statement. Will not be satisfied with silver. He who loves money will not be satisfied with money. Do you know what he's saying? Those who look around you. Those who have lots of money, don't look at me. Those who have, just in case, my wife looks at me sometimes like that, yeah, okay. Those who have lots of money are not satisfied with just money, no matter how much you give them. I just mentioned Don Giovanni. $6.2 billion. You'd think, who wants to be prime minister? Who wants to go into politics? Why do you want the headaches? Huh? And all the paparazzi around you be an absolute pain. You know the desire. I mean, money is power. That's true. And power corrupts. It's inclined to do that. Doesn't have to, but it often does. But here we have a very true statement. They are not content with just money. And I'm going to prove that to you. Okay. Let's have a look here. I'm going to give you the quote and then see if any of you can tell me who said this. When a government is dependent for money upon the bankers, they, that's the bankers, and not the government, leaders control the nation. Does that make sense to you? No, don't call names yet. We'll come to that. Yeah, no, don't run ahead of me. Now, I just want you to see this. Is that a true statement or what? Oh, yes, absolutely. Here's another one. This is because the hand that gives is above the hand that takes. True? Here's the last part. Financiers are without patriotism and without decency. You know who said that? You know the little fat bloke? Yeah, he's Napoleon. He wasn't that stupid. He should have won, you know. And he almost did. After his mistake in Russia. A few years later, he fought in Waterloo. He should have won that, by the way, if you really studied that battle. He was right about this. He was very right about that. Very much so. Now, how true that is. Now let me introduce you to the ultimate banking system, the Federal Reserve Bank. Used to be called the central bank. It's been looming there for the last few hundred years to be put in place. There are some of the notes. Do you know that the Federal Reserve Bank of America is not required to submit financial information? It's not subject to the Inland Revenue Service, the taxation. It pays tax, actually, it does. What are things it should pay? Not subject to audits. They never are. They do not publish the amount of money they print. By the way, they're the only institution that print. Let me explain something to you. President Obama would like maybe $400 billion. I don't know, for whatever. And it's a lot of money, actually. But anyway, he passes it. It gets passed by Congress. And then there's a request that goes to the Reserve Bank of America for printing, because that's what they do, for printing $400 billion. And then they send the money plus the bill for printing it to the government. And they, in return, get as security from the government, government bonds. And they're basically IOUs. I wonder what is the Reserve Bank putting up for a guarantee for the money. That exactly is the point. That is where we're at. This is very precarious. They don't really publish the amount they print. Not really. Not required to submit financial information, not subject to IRS orders. You remember him? You know, it's something very... I don't like... I'm not really into conspiracy theories. But I'd have to say, if you study the American presidents in the last few hundred years that were assassinated, not one of them liked the central bank or the Federal Reserve Bank. They never solved the problem why he got bumped off, killed, I'm sorry, pardon me. Yeah? It's strange, isn't it? Yes, it is. Okay, now he wanted to change that. And I think that did him in. Woodrow Wilson, very different, 1913, he signed it as an act of parliament. It became an act of parliament. Totally ratified. What was totally ratified? Well, this. Let me have a look at this. This is interesting. The Act permits the Federal Reserve Bank to act as a fiscal agent for the United States government. In fact, if you go further, this Act remains as one of the principal banking laws of the United States. You know, they virtually control the interest rate globally. When they speak, when they talk, the whole of the financial world is silence and listens. Whatever they say. Whatever they say. They are so powerful. And the question, and the pertinent question is, who owns the Federal Reserve Bank? Now it's true that the president does appoint the governors on the board and the president of the, of course, of the Reserve Bank. That is true. They're government appointed. But you know, there's something very interesting about this bank. Who owns the Federal Reserve Bank of America? Well, I can tell you who owns the Reserve Bank here in Australia. That's Australia. And anywhere else in the world, that's exactly the case. But not in America. It's not. It's not. I'm going to tell you a little bit about that, what is so interesting. I want you to see the major shareholder, if you like, or senior partner in this banking system. Now, he's dead. He passed away in 1812. But there's something very interesting here. Meyer Amschel Rothschild, German Jew, from poverty. Boy, did he rise. Rothschild was his actual German name, and that became transliterated in Rothschild. He had all his sons working for him in his banking empire and a son-in-law. Very interesting. He read his Bible, by the way. Oh, he did. And in this psalm, he read this. Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord. Yeah. He said, like arrows in the hand of a warrior, so are the children of one's youth. Happy is the man who has his quiver full of them. Can you see the emblems here? See, that's Rothschild. These are the sons that work for you and do as they're told. And they add to your power. They shall not be ashamed. And then he went on to say, but shall speak with their enemies where? By the gate. Now I'm going to have a look at that. By the way, just a quick mention, they are also the guardians of the Vatican treasury. I thought I'd just throw that one in. They are. Yes, they are. Very significant. What an odd combination. Jews, Roman Catholics, everything is possible with money, almost. Now, there's a word here. This is Psalm 127. That little bit here is actually in one sentence, one word, Bashaar. Ba means in or to or at. And this is the gate. Sha'ar means door, it means gate. But if you go to Proverbs 23, verse 7, there is a little statement that goes like this. As a man thinks in his heart, that is how he is. That word thinking is the same word as here, sha'ar. It means door. Did you know in the sanctuary, if you were outside and you wanted to walk into the sanctuary, into the courtyard, that door, even if it was a curtain, it was referred to as a door, is called sha'ar. Sha'ar is a mindset. When you step from outside into the courtyard, you step into the mindset. In fact, you step in the mindset of your helper, your atzar, which is Christ. And then if you go from the courtyard into the holy place, that's the same name, that door, Sha'ar. It's another mindset. You can't go there, but your priest can. And then if you go from the holy place to the most holy place, that curtain there still went by the name of Sha'ar. Very important word in the Hebrew. You see, what this poetry is saying, because that's what it is, it's a psalm. They shall speak with their enemies to their mind. They will tell them what to think. They will tell them. And if you look around and you consider some of the statements, have a look at this. I want you to see this one, and this one actually comes straight from Rothschild himself. Give me control of a nation's money, and I care not who. What's he saying? Control. Remember, he who loves money will not be satisfied with money. That's interesting. And the borrower is the servant to the lender. You know what this whole thing is based upon? And it must be blatantly obvious to you. The whole system of economics is based on greed. It's no longer trading. It is how do we deal with our greed. What is greed? Greed is wanting to have what you shouldn't have. Greed is wanting to be that which you are not and crave for recognition, but you're not that person. It comes in many different forms. It is wanting to be more, it is wanting to have more than you have, that you are entitled to, that God has given you. I put the Bible open there, just maybe I was thinking about using it, and I'm going to use this. If you look there at the 14th chapter of the book of Isaiah, I just read a little bit here, how you are fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning. How you are cut down to the ground, you who weaken the nations, for you have said in your heart, I will ascend in heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars. That is the stars of God, the angels. I will also sit on the mount of the congregation in the secret, sacred council of the recesses of the north where God sits. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. You know, the first one that he got on this planet, what did he say to the woman? You'll be like God. God has been lying to you. You're not going to drop that. Now, he lied because she's dead. She didn't drop that, but she died. Now, it's interesting. There is something sinister about greed. And we all battle with it. I have to say, I do too. You've got to be, it's not just about money, it's about a lot of other things that you are not entitled to, and you are to leave it alone and not even desire it. Do you understand what I'm getting at, folks? You know, it takes soul searching, and please do that. It's a good pastime. Make time for that. Well, this man knew exactly what people wanted. He knew exactly how to deal with politicians. All you need to do is to control the money. Because then you control the people, including the politicians. If the government is the borrower, the government will have to listen to the lender. And they can be enemies. But if you are the lender, your hand is higher than his hand. And you talk to them in the gate, you talk to their mind, and you tell them what you want them to do. You know, that's a fact. Have a look at this. An unholy alliance. You know, the Bible teaches something that right there at the end time, as everything culminates and Christ is returning, some of you will understand what I'm putting up here, others will not. If you want to understand what we're going to put up here, can I suggest, and here's the commercial again, Wednesday nights, you can learn. Because we've been learning, haven't we? Oh yes, of course we have. And you'll understand. You will understand these things as well. So please, do come on Wednesdays. This is what we're doing right now. That no one may buy or sell. No one. He is talking about the whole world. He is talking about a form of globalism where there is a prohibition, a conditional prohibition that you will not be able to buy and sell. You know when this was written? 96 AD. On an obscure island called Patmos. How could a man see that globalism would be a fact in the end of days? But he did. You know, some of those prophecies are absolutely so incredible. And so he says that no one may buy or sell. Under inspiration, he said this. No one may buy or sell. That includes your credit cards. They're absolutely, absolutely useless. Except one who has the mark, the name of the beast, or the number of his name. You could also read it, and there's contextual evidence, or the beast meaning, therefore, the number of his name, it doesn't really matter. What does matter, there is going to be a conflict right at the end of times. And you have to be identifying, you will have to be identifying with an entity and do as you are told. You know why? Because you're the borrower. By the way, your government is the borrower. Your government will have to comply with the wishes of the lender. Get it? And so here we have a people. What if that were to happen, that no one may buy or sell? You say, well, suppose I couldn't buy. That'd be terrible. Selling doesn't worry me, because you're not selling anything. Yes, you do. If you have a job, you sell something, don't you? You sell your time and expertise, your capacity for work. You won't be able to work. You won't have a job. And if you look at the world, if you look at our societies where it is common to owe hundreds of thousands of dollars, when you have a credit card bill you can't climb over, people do that to themselves. And then there was an enactment, say there will be an enactment. And by the way, this is still imminent future. You say, this will never happen here. Trust me. I've always said, you know, the one thing they'll never tax you on is fresh air. You'll start to pay next year. They call it carbon tax. Yeah? Oh, this is interesting, isn't it? This is going to happen. As sure as I am standing here, this is going to happen. And where will you be when you owe hundreds of thousands of dollars? And they tell you, what are you going to choose? Compliance? Or might you be strong enough? I wonder. It's interesting. I'm just saying, what would you do? What would you do? There was a rich young ruler, he came to Jesus. And he came to Jesus and he put this question to Jesus, good teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life? Now, I want you to understand something. He had seen Jesus with the children. And he saw something that really touched him. Jesus was very good with kids, you see. And he could see, he could feel the love between the children and Jesus and the children. You know, this was wonderful. He looked at it and he longed for it. He had everything. The one thing he didn't have was that. He didn't have that. And then something welled up in him. As Jesus was going to walk away, he ran after him. He ran after him. He actually knelt in front of Jesus and he called him a good teacher. Good teacher. Jesus picked him up on that. He said, why do you call me good? He said, because no one is good but the one. The word there in Hebrew, you don't just use that liberally. He said, no, I'm good as God, if you know what I mean, as good as God. And the man didn't deny it. He could see there was a divine wisdom. There was a divine presence. Whether he realized that he was speaking to God himself, I'll never know. But one thing for certain, he believed Jesus in what he said. This man, by the way, was a pillar of society. This man was a good man. He ran after Jesus. He held a high position, didn't matter. He ran after him and he kneeled in front of him. And he called him good. And he asked the right question to the right person. Wouldn't you say? He's on his way to salvation, wouldn't he be? You'd think so. And then Jesus said something to him. Do you know Jesus never told him to his face straight off what was wrong with him? He met him on his own ground because this man would have been a legalist. Keep the law and you'll be right, mate. And then Jesus mentioned the commandments. And then when he mentioned the commandments, he made a selection of commandments that he used. He never referred to the first four. To love your God, above all, basically is the summary. Have no other gods, no graven images. Not use his name in vain and keep a seventh day Sabbath. He did all that. So Jesus didn't use that. He went to the last six, which has to do with your fellow man. Honor your father and your mother. Don't kill. No adultery. Don't steal. And don't lie. That's all he said. And you know what the answer was? You know what the answer was? It's interesting. Teacher, all these things I've kept from my youth. He had honored his father and his mother. He had not killed. He had not committed adultery. He had not stolen. He had not lied. He could say that. And Jesus didn't attack him on these. He probably did. But there was one that Jesus didn't mention. Which one was that? How good that is, that reply. Thou shalt not covet. You can't always see that coveting, can you? By the way, if Jesus would have said, you shall not covet, that means your neighbor's house and whatever, he might have said, well, no, I don't. He already owned his neighbor's house. He was very wealthy. But Jesus tripped him on this one. He proved to this man that that is where he was wrong. And if you break one of the commandments, you break them all, because it has something to do with your relationship to your God. And so when the man said, I've done all that, note the words of Jesus. He said, he looked at him and he loved him. The Gospels say that Jesus loved him. Do you know that Jesus was not there to correct him? Jesus was trying to save him. He wanted to save him. And he looked at him, he loved him, and he said, there's one thing you lack. There's one thing. And then he gave him the absolute answer to his question. How was he, the young ruler, how was he going to get life eternal? He said this, go your way, sell whatever you have and give it to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven, and come, take up the cross and follow me. That would have been the cure. Had he done so, he would have had eternal life. This is the point. It's easy to say that you love Jesus. It's easy to come to church, and you should, by the way. It is easy to tithe, and you should. And free will offering, please keep it coming. So we can continue to meet. And you've been so faithful in this. What commandment did he break? This one. Because he couldn't do it, by the way. Here, have a look. But he was sad at this word and he went away sorrowful. He went away sorrowful. That means he believed Jesus was right. Yes, that's what it means. Do you know he believed Jesus, that Jesus was absolutely 100% right? That is what made him so sad. He had many possessions. Let's take the list again. What is the first commandment? You shall have no other gods before me. Did he break that? Yes, he did. What was his god? Yeah, his possessions. It was not his possessions, his possessions possessed him. And it doesn't take much. By the way, you can covet something that doesn't belong to another. You can covet what you already have. A greater affection than that for Jesus. And that doesn't have to be property, that could be a person. That could be a person. For he had many possessions. Did he have make graven images? Well, in a fashion. Yeah, properties and all of that. Yeah. Did he take the name of the Lord God in vain? Well, he would deny it. But if he says he was a follower of God and he isn't, and he's not keeping the other two that precede it, seventh day Sabbath, I'm sure he kept it. Well, when I say I'm sure, what if the phone went and you had to deal with some money? No phones, I know, but you know what I mean. Then Jesus looked around and said to his disciples, the first four were wrong and the last he defaulted to. Jesus looked around and said to his disciples, how hard it is for those who have riches to enter the kingdom of heaven. You know, that is interesting. When I see that in the closing scene of this planet, there is going to be a decree, no buying, no selling, I think Satan knows exactly what Jesus meant. Would you give it up? Would you walk away of what you have? if it came to the crunch. Walk away from your possession or the persons you love, if it had to be. You want to think about this. Satan will get you where it hurts. He's very clever. Jesus knew this. And he says how hard it is for those who have riches to enter the kingdom of heaven. It is easier for a camel to go through the eyes of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of God. And that is also true in the closing scenes of this planet. What should be the global agenda? Well, I know what it is out there. But this is what Jesus says. He said, seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. And then he says, and all these things shall be added to you. Now, you want eternal life? You want to be able to walk away if that happened to you, if that choice came to you. You want that power. You're not going to have it of yourself. But if you are in a relationship with God, with your Redeemer, you'll walk. You will. Nothing between you and your Savior.